I was in, I gave a Yom Iyun on Monday, I think it was, for a bunch of girls in Shirutlu Umi, and our discussion from last week came up. The discussion, you know, because...
Came up a lot.
Came up a lot. Yeah, it will continue today. The discussion of money versus Torah. That was basically the nutshell of the discussion. And we're going to continue the discussion today, because it came up in the context of making life choices, of choosing between one value or another, between, you know, going after a certain value in life and going after another. And of course the girls jumped on me and said, it's not all black and white, it's not all true, you don't have to choose between, you know, money or Torah, you know, everybody needs sustenance, and of course that's true. I said, but in the broader scheme of things, right, we do make choices in life about the decisions that we make and about the directions that we go, and the things that we focus our lives on, which is it's a struggle I struggle with, and I'm sure all of you struggle with as well. Just derech agav. Right, today we're going to talk about the man, which is also going to be a discussion about parnasa. So I was speaking. Yeah. You're on the blow. You want to turn it off? You're hot. Okay. You guys okay?
Yeah.
Yeah. Turn it off. Just to warm up the. Okay. I was talking to my brother-in-law, who lives in a city in America. Okay. No, my sister's husband.
No.
Okay. And he has older children. Kanayahara. Their children are teenagers and leaving high school and whatever. And of course, the discussion of tuition came up. You know, and just it's, I don't know what it's like, you know, in the other countries, but. It's interesting. I was talking to my brother-in-law. He was telling me that his daughter's high school tuition was like $8,500, which I said, $8,500?
It's not cheap.
I spoke to my brother Sunday in Florida. His child's nursery school is double that. Which is like, what do they do there? You know, they have university professors or nursery school? I don't know, whatever. You know? And I said to him, my comment is, and I think this is a definite truism in the American Jewish community, in the firm community, that tuition is the great equalizer, is the great welfare of the Jewish community. Why do I mean that? Because whether you make collectively $70,000 or $170,000 a year, I don't know what that translates to, you are the same. Why? Let's say you have four children. So your tuition for four children is, you know, 50, 60, whatever it is, right? So if you make $70,000 a year, so your taxes for four children are going to be almost nothing, right? But you're also not going to be required to pay the full tuition. You just can't afford it. So your kids are going to go on scholarship. If you make $170,000, your taxes are going to be significant. Plus, the scholarships committee is going to look at you and say, you make $170,000. You have to pay full tuition. So in the end, the guy making $70,000 and the guy making $170,000 are almost the same.
Unless you're off the books.
Well, let's assume, we're going to assume nobody does such a thing and everybody's honest, you know. At least where I come from, that's the way it is. Okay, you know. And what's so interesting about it, I mean, it's like, it's a very challenging thing that, I don't, does anybody disagree with my assessment of the great welfare from state? You know?
That, you're getting $500,000.
Oh, if you get, right. Once you get past a certain point, then, but the difference is significant.
Yeah.
You'd have to be making a tremendous amount more in order for it to make a difference.
Well, all the schools are bankrupt.
Well, all the schools are bankrupt, for sure. But there's never enough money. You know what I'm saying? But
it's already worse in Australia because people buy their humongous house on the cliffs overlooking the sea in their boat, and then that's why they can't afford their tuition. But they're still living a hell of a lot better than the person who's earning a lot less and living
that's
in a
true.
Small house with no boat.
Interesting. Like that in America, too? Yeah, to some degree.
They can't pay, but it's not because...
I hear from like my cousin in Teaneck, I think that there's a truism in this, that the difference, that once you get to a certain range, then it really all kind of squishes down because of tuition. You know, and we're going to speak about this because it goes to the question of need and how much do you have and how much HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives you, and I think it raises very interesting issues based on the way we choose to live our lives and the way we choose to support ourselves. So obviously today I want to discuss the Parsha of the Man. There's a lot in the Parsha of the Man. There's a lot textually, but the Midrashim are amazing, are really critical and really important, and hopefully we'll get to some of the the textual questions and also lessons of the man as well. So we'll begin on Perek Tet Zayin in Bishalach. There's a lot of talk about Bishalach. So you can't do it all every year, so today we'll do the man. Says the Torah. So they obviously, they got out of Mitzrayim, very nice. If just to bring you up to speed, after they got out, after the Az Yashir, right, they go to this place called Marah, and they don't have water. And Hashem shows them the miracle tree, and the miracle tree makes the water sweet. Very nice. Okay? And from then, they went a little farther, they found these wells, and now they come to, now we're on Perek Tet Zayin. Vayisume Elim. They travel from Elim. Vayavo kol adat bnei Yisrael el midbar sin asher ben Elim uben Sinai. So they're on the way to Midbar Sinai. Bachamisha asar yom lechodesh sheni letzeitam me'eretz Mitzrayim. Okay, on the 15th day of the second month from when they went out of Egypt. How long total so far are they on the road?
Less than a month.
A little less than a month, right? When did they leave? Well, almost exactly a month.
2 weeks.
Okay, fine.
Right, when did they leave? How far are they away from home? When did they leave home?
A month ago,
on the 15th day of the first month. So now we're a month later, which only begs the question. What's that?
Are they going around in circles?
No, they're not going around in circles. They left, they went through Yam Suf, and now they're traveling through Elim to Midbar Sinai, obviously, as we know, in order to receive the Torah. Okay? Rina's question is?
Why did it take them so long?
To
get there.
Oh, why did it take them? They're walking. Right. How long does it take you to load up the car?
I don't know.
What's the distance?
What have they been eating? Yeah, I mean, we're about to wonder.
That was supposed to be my question.
I thought you were asking what took them so long. Yes, they did. What did they take?
Unleavened bread.
Right. Okay. Now, just so you know, unleavened bread is not our matzah. Our matzah could last a month, in theory. I mean, think about how much matzah would you also have to schlep? Oh, shalom aleichem. How much would you have to schlep?
Lafa.
So how much matzah would you have to schlep? Let me get to it again. How much matzah would you have to schlep in order to sustain your whole family? You want to move the table back? Yeah.
The
chair's over here.
Hi. Push the table.
Push it towards me. Towards me. Ready, set, go. We have a couple chairs over here. How much matzah would you have to schlep in order, Mimi, to sustain your family for a month? Pounds and pounds of it.
Correct. My kids don't eat matzah, so
well, what would they eat? They would eat matzah. Yeah. That's all there was.
That's all there was. They would eat it.
Right. And there's two chairs here. Let's see. We can just. He would just stop eating. Very good. But these weren't matzot, obviously, right? These weren't. These were lafas, right? What would happen to lafas in a day?
Stale.
Right. What'd they eat? What'd they eat?
I'm sorry.
What'd they eat for a month?
That's a good question.
No,
there was no money.
After they crossed the Yam Suf, was there fish there?
In the Yam Suf? So they caught the fish. No, you know, and all the fruit trees they got from the Yam Suf. We're not two weeks after that. One second. We're 3 weeks after that.
They were hungry. No refrigeration.
Okay.
I thought they were going to call the UN.
What took so long? What took so long? It's a little bit... wondrous, right? So we see.
The pasuk before says,
All right, 70 dates. Okay, 70 date trees. For how many people?
A lot.
Right. All right, you know.
Dates aren't exactly filling.
Dates are wonderful. You can make all kinds of things out of dates. Yeah, it's very good. It's healthy. Right. But I mean, 70 date trees, it's a, you know, what were they eating? Right, so the Torah doesn't really address that. The Torah doesn't really address what were they eating, which is interesting. You know, how much did they take for themselves? How could they possibly have taken enough to last? Unless they also took flour.
Still, even the flour.
They still have to do something.
No, they have water. You can bake it in the sun, I guess.
But they take animals with.
Yeah, but they didn't eat the animals. I mean, they did take animals.
They could have taken some animals.
They definitely took animals. How do we know they took animals?
Because that's how they had animals for the carbonate.
Correct. They had to have animals.
So
I mean, it's clear that they did. What?
So there's milk.
There's milk.
Mm-hmm.
So milk condensed, you can double.
And meat.
What are your animals?
The cow and eat meat.
Oh, you could. Right, right. It's a month.
Obviously.
It's a nation for a month.
Okay, but a cow can last a long time.
One cow.
A lot of people.
Not, yeah, but the,
how many cows would it take to support 2 million people?
Right.
No, but there's documentary that they didn't eat meat.
Right. Correct. Well, they ate meat. They didn't eat meat. It's unclear. So all I'm pointing out is the Torah does not fill in this little detail. So it says, "Vayilonu kol adat pasuk bed, vayilonu kol adat neisel al Moshe ve'al Aharon v'amidbar." I'm focusing on the word "vayilonu" because we're going to see. Can I have tissue, please? Oh, they're gone. We're going to see that word "vayilonu" tlunot appear a lot. This, when a word appears a lot of times, it raises questions. So just so that you know, so the Midrash says, so if you look at Rashi, okay? Look at Rashi on Pasuk Aleph. Chamishasa Yom. Nitparesh Hayom Shel Chanayazu, right? The reason why this day was explained. Lefi Shebo Bayom Kalta HaCharara Shotziu Mimitzayim V'Tzvecha Laman. The Midrash says, based on the Gemara, that food that they had lasted them for a month. We learned that they ate from the leftovers of their dough. 61 meals. Right, 61 meals out of some dough? That's pretty amazing dough.
Oh, it's like sourdough that you
keep. Only if you have flour. Sourdough doesn't really regenerate itself. So the Midrash says, how did they sustain themselves for the further month after they left Mitzrayim? It was a nes. Right, so that in of itself was a nes, and then it ran out. Right? Somehow the food finally ran out. Okay?
That is very scary, if you think about it. That you're being fed for a month by miracle.
Uh-huh.
And then the miracle stops. Well, I was in the middle of the desert with my children. I would start getting really nervous too.
Okay, good. Let's see what they say. Vayomru aleihem b'nei Yisrael. So b'nei Yisrael said to them, Mi yutein mutenu b'yad Hashem b'eretz Mitzrayim, b'shivtenu al sir habasar, V'achleinu lechem lasova. I don't even want to translate that. It's difficult to translate. Mi yutein mutenu b'yad Hashem b'eretz Mitzrayim.
Halavai,
right? If you look at the unklus, he says, Levai de mitna kadam Hashem. Halavai that we died at the hands of God b'eretz Mitzrayim in Egypt b'shivtenu al sir habasar, when we sat on the flesh pot. Isn't that a great word? The flesh pots in Egypt. Ba'achalnu ba'achleinu lechem lasova. Right? And we had plenty of bread to eat. There was like, you know, like in today's words, what did they say to Moshe and Aaron? There was a lot that they said, but they said subtle things. What did they say to Moshe and Aaron?
We had a good
day. Oh.
Take us back.
They didn't say take us back. They said, only we had died there. Right? Remember the meat in Egypt? Oh, Egypt. Egypt was the greatest. Right?
It's like us now. hospitals.
Chutzlaretz. V'achleinu lechem lasova. We had so much to eat over there. Like, but I just want to point out, Tammy, you're absolutely right. We very much, life is like that. When you're going through a struggle, right? When you're having a hard time with whatever, you're having a hard time with the hospitals, right? You know what I'm saying? Somebody's having a hard time, you're like, you know, I'm not like 100% thrilled with the job I have now. So what do I say? Remember the job I used to have, that old job, and you know, and my co-workers. And then your wife has to look at you and say, it wasn't all peaches and roses, if you recall. You know, like it wasn't, but you do that. You romanticize, or you fantasize about the good things, because conveniently you have forgotten the parts about it, the slavery that you didn't really like. You know, hello, remember you were slaves there? No, it was all meat and bread. It was like, you know, we had roast beef sandwiches all day in Egypt.
Lamb.
Right, and a good lamb. It was terrific. So I just want to point out that the B'nai Israel are simply perpetrating a psychological phenomenon, a reality.
Well.
Correct.
Maybe right, hallucinating because they stopped.
No, I don't want to say they're hungry. Okay. Yeah, they're hungry, but like, let's be honest. Like, was Egypt that great?
But they didn't get to eat meat there. I can't imagine they gave them meat.
Apparently they say it was Sir Habasar. It was great. We had meat over there. What's that?
So that's human nature.
That's exactly right.
It's you're exaggerating the good point. You're conveniently forgetting all the hardships.
Right, we do. We conveniently forget the hardships, and we remember the things that we liked about it as opposed to the things that we didn't like. And it's important to remember that. Like, you see it black and white in the Bnei Israel. Like, but it wasn't all like, you know, strawberries and cream back where we came from. Yes, there are struggles now, but we shouldn't think to ourselves that it was perfect. You know, just because we knew how to navigate the system or because we have struggles here. Right? We have to be honest with ourselves and remember that it wasn't 100% there either. You know, it wasn't all Sir HaBasar. Anyway, okay. But then they say, Ki hotseitem otanu el hamidbar hazeh lahamit et kol hakahal hazeh bera'av. You have brought us out to this desert to kill this entire community with famine. Okay? What's wrong with what they say? There's two possible problems with what they say.
They've already seen Hashem, so they could expect more miracles.
Ah, okay. So one problem with what they say is a possible theological problem. Right? Here you are, Hashem just took you out of Mitzrayim. Right? And how have you been eating until now? Okay, so now all of a sudden you ran out of bread and, you know, immediately you go crazy. Except, it's understandable in a way. Right? That isn't it understandable? You know, when you run out of food.
It's not like they had bread and they brought that bread out. A miracle stopped.
Right.
Why would they think that another one would stop?
Okay, right. And even if, let's say you want to go umshah and say somehow that they had enough food and then they ran out. Right? If you ran out of food, right, so you say to yourself, okay, what's the next? Like, what's next? We're in the middle of the desert. Now, what are we going to eat? Right? It's a fair question. But then what's the problem?
They blame Moshe.
Ah, it's so interesting. That's the second problem. That's actually the third problem. Right? Who do they blame here?
Moshe.
Right. As they say, Vayomer lehem, mi yitein v'nimsar, what do they say? Ki hotseitem otanu el hamidbar hazeh. Who did they complain against? It's a very subtle but important textual reality. Vayilonu kol adat bnei Yisrael al Moshe v'al Aharon b'amidbar. Right? Their complaint is not against Hashem, it's against Moshe and Aharon, which indicates a fundamental problem. What's the fundamental problem?
You're still not realizing that it comes from Hashem.
Right, it's not the same. It's not like Moshe knows, we know, when, you know, who are they following? They're following the cloud. Who makes the cloud?
Sure.
Right. But what do they think?
Moshe.
Right. It was Moshe's cloud, or, you know, like that there's some disconnect between God and Moshe. And they say it very clearly. They complain against Moshe. Now they say, Mi yutein mutein biyad Hashem be'eretz Mitzrayim. Right. Where do they think God is? God is back in Egypt, because God was the one who did all those amazing things in Egypt. But God split the sea, said goodbye, and said, hi, have a nice trip. Let us know how it is. Like, and Moshe, what should you have done then? Right, okay, we're on our own. Very good. God left Egypt. What should you have done? You should have, led us somewhere else.
Other than the desert.
Other than the middle of the desert. Right, you were good when God was there, but now God is gone, so we're, like, you know, we're all stuck.
This raises a question. Don't they know they're going to Christ anyway?
Do they know?
Do they?
I don't know. Why would they?
Where we go?
It raises a fundamental question. If they know where they're going, then there's a purpose in they're walking.
Okay.
If they don't know where they're going, that's very disorientating.
Okay.
But can you imagine too many people not?
No, they know where they're going. Wait, one second. Do they know where they're going? The answer clearly is yes. Where are they going? No. They're going to Eretz Yisrael. They're going to their land of their forefathers.
You have to cross the desert to get there.
Right. Okay. So first of all, like, they don't know. Like, do they know that Moshe's not taking them the most direct route?
I don't know.
Do they have maps?
Do they have any concept of the world?
Do they have any concept of where they're going?
Outside of their
right.
Actually, so that I don't totally agree with, because...
You think that they would know?
Because they must have had a masoret, because they went, because there has been, because Yaakov came down, right, and then Yosef went back to bury Yaakov.
How do you get there? How do you get there?
You walk north.
North? What's north?
That they knew back then.
No, they were more sophisticated than that.
They were. Do you think they were able to track?
Pyramids. Yes.
The Egyptians built
the
pyramids.
Know.
What?
Nonsense. The Jews built the pyramids.
People had compasses, though.
Did they have compasses back then? They did not have compasses back then. They would use star navigation. They did know the constellations. Yes.
They're the ones that built the pyramids.
Okay.
They knew which way was north. The sun, right? They knew which way was north.
And we still don't know how they did that.
They knew it. They knew.
But how would they know to go north? Again, I'm not clear that they would know. How would they know that? I mean, they came down from Egypt. How would you would know?
No, because they knew that Yaakov had been brought back. There was a masoret there.
Okay, they knew that Yaakov's bones had been brought back to the promised land.
From Canaan.
I don't know. I'm not entirely sure that that's true.
So how did Yaakov know? How did Yosef know?
They were recognized trade routes.
I was about to say, this was like a major...
Okay. Well, okay. This is a point of interesting debate that I don't know how to answer. I think they were
entrenched in their slave life.
Yeah, really, how would they know?
Even if they had the capability of thinking beyond, of being able to intellectually comprehend.
What?
The Levium were not slaves.
And what did they do?
They were the intelligentsia.
Yeah. Were they? They were the navigators? I think somebody studied. Do you think they studied in school? I think that you have a different perception.
The center of world culture in those days.
Yeah, but they didn't share it with their slaves.
Yeah, but the Levium.
They were slaves. They looked at the slaves as property. You don't say, like, you know, like, think about how America treated its slaves. They didn't send them to school. They didn't educate.
They still knew which way was north.
They didn't educate because they heard about the north because they knew north was freedom. They didn't educate them. If you said, I want you to walk from Mississippi to Tennessee, they wouldn't know how to go?
Yeah.
Would they?
Yeah.
What?
Would you?
No. Yeah. Exactly.
I think in those days, like, we use aids to guide us because we don't have an understanding of how to navigate nature.
You're assuming that... But anyway, so they end up in the middle of the desert. They're here in the middle of the desert. If you were going to go to the promised land, would you go by desert?
Why is Moshe taking them such a route?
There is no other
why?
Route.
Why?
They crossed the sea.
Correct.
To get to Northland.
Ah, that's a very good question. Why did Moshe take them this way?
Because look where Mitzrayim is and look where Israel is. It's only one way to go.
No, the Torah says, Lo nacham Elohim derech eretz plishtim. He did not take them the most direct way, which would be up the coast.
Yes.
Why? Because in the beginning of the parasha, Ken yinachem ha'am birotam milchama b'shavu Mitzrayim. Lest they see battle and they'd have to go back. They would be afraid. They'd run away. Right? They were not ready to confront.
To go through Asa.
What does that mean, though? That then what's the point of taking them in this circuitous route? The point is to take them. They're not ready yet. They need to ripen. Right? They need to coalesce. Okay. How do you coalesce them? What's the point? How are they going to be coalesced? They're not doing military training.
They're going to go through some struggle.
Correct. They have to go through a process. So obviously this whole purpose, God took away the food. Right? The miracle happened, and all of a sudden the miracle ended. What's the point of taking away the food? Because he wants them to...
To go through a struggle
to go,
and bring them together.
To bring them together to...
Understand that he's there with them.
What? Right. Correct. Right. The core of the Jewish people, our success as a people, is fundamentally based upon, are we connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu or not? Right. If we are, then we'll win in the battles. We'll win. We'll accomplish. We'll build. We'll do the things that we need to do. If we don't have faith, we won't.
So they would have just permitted, please, Moshe.
Very good. So the Midrash says one of two things. Okay, the Midrash says they complained one of the that day. Why? Because they ran out of food that day. Okay. There's another midrash that says the following: Devar Acher, very interesting midrash. Hayalem Yisrael lavo v'lo Moshe v'lo Mar. They should have come to Moshe and said, Havei odea shenishlam oto batzek. Hey Moshe, do you know we ran out of food? Meaning, like, they should have come to Moshe and said, like, the committee has a problem, we need to address, like, can you please help us? We need more food. Except, Elabau ala b'meriva. What do they come to? What do they do? What do they say? And they say, Why did you take us out of here? We want to go back to Egypt. This is terrible. What are we doing here? It's the tone. It's the complaint. Like, the first thing they do is by Yilonu, the complaint.
I have a question.
1 second. And I think also the text says the third problem is, I'll get to your question in a second, the third problem is there's a fundamental disconnect, a fundamental problem. They don't see Moshe and Hashem as intertwined. It's so interesting. Vayiru ha'am et Hashem, vayaminu b'Hashem, u b'Moshe avdo. Right? You could read that one of two ways. They believed in Hashem and Moshe as his servant, or they believed in Hashem and they believed in Moshe, but not together. And that's a problem, because if Moshe is going to communicate the Torah, right, he has to be one and together with Hashem. Yeah. Yeah.
So after what you just said, that Moshe is to be with Hashem, but he's still the leader of the nation.
Mm-hmm.
So isn't it Moshe's job? Wasn't it his responsibility to notice that there was no more food and do something about it? Why every time throughout that when they're in the desert, we assume that Moshe was still Basar Vadam.
Yeah.
So when they got to Meribah, he also was thirsty. And here, he also should have been hungry.
Yeah.
So why doesn't Moshe preempt anything?
And say to Hashem, we need some food?
Yeah. And then all these problems would have been solved. If he's the leader and he has a direct line with God. So I understand that Hashem is trying to teach the people something, but
right.
Moshe as a leader, as a leadership figure, failed. He failed to he's supposed to be worrying about his flock, and they don't, there is no food for them. So why is he just sitting there, and it's only when the people, of course the people are upset, because you're our leader. You also don't have any food, so why aren't you doing something?
I can go one of two ways in this. One is a little more controversial than another. Okay. One could be to say, he didn't see himself in that role. Isn't it possible to say?
Because he had
emunah.
Hashem would provide.
Right. What's the problem? It'll happen. You know, he didn't see himself as the role of the leader who has to worry about and say, no, Kosh Baruch will provide. It's not my job. It's Kosh Baruch.
It's the law of the...
What?
The male member of the family. Don't worry, Hashem will provide. And the children are starving. Responsibility.
Remember, Moshe.
Yes, but that is irresponsible.
One could suggest that Moshe didn't see his role in that way. Kadosh Baruch Hu told him to take him out. He did my job. Okay, now we'll follow whatever Hashem says.
How come Hashem chooses him? He's not down to earth. He's not like with the people. He's in the cloud.
Well, he's not. Okay. Good question.
Like the whole time he's in the cloud.
Exactly.
Like he's not.
Exactly. It strengthens my point that they have a leader who's like spiritually helping them, but when you're in the middle of the desert.
See, Moshe is a huge conundrum because we want him to be both. We want him to be, he has to be the person who goes up to Har Sinai and brings the Torah to Bnei Israel. So in order to do that, he has to be like, in the clouds. But on the other hand, you want him to be like the other guy, the same kind of person who, no, he's aware of the needs of the people.
And
lead them to what?
Aaron.
What?
That's Aaron. That's Aaron. So why didn't Aaron speak to him?
Aaron's just the brother. He's the spokesman.
Okay.
He's the spokesman.
He's the
PR.
He's the one who... The practical thing.
My other comment is, I'm a little uncomfortable with this direction because I think we need a little bit more reverence for Moshe. That's part of our emunah also, that Kadosh Baruch Hu picked Moshe, and Moshe Rabbeinu is Moshe Eved Hashem, and one could suggest, I think quite plausibly, that Moshe knew that Kadosh Baruch Hu was waiting for the come from the people.
Yeah.
He wanted them to come and say
to have to ask.
For yeah, and then, but they didn't ask. They kvetched. No, that's not ask. That's not ask. You know what I'm saying? Just imagine with your own kids, they come to you and they say, "Where's supper?" You know we're hungry, and you don't have supper on time. Whoa! Right? As opposed to, Ima, can I have a snack?
But that's because they know there's a fridge full of food, and it's not exactly difficult to get. Together, people are in the middle of the desert, and they're like, hello, we've got no food, what's going on? I don't think that's unreasonable.
But look what they say, but it's how do they say it? Again, we're only in the first pasuk. How do they say it? They said, I'll say it again. Mi yutein mutenu biyad Hashem v'eretz v'tzayim. Ima, if only I died at the falafel store on Kvishesh. Mizifgashesh. If we had died then, we would be okay. When we ate the delicious falafel. But you had to bring me home to starve to death. I mean, it seems a little much, doesn't it? This language seems much. Mayom Hashem El Moshe. By the way, in theory, you would expect if somebody to speak that way against Hashem, what should happen to them?
Bam, bam, bam.
Right, the Midrash says they should be punished. They should be punished.
It's like you don't give your kids supper when they're
talking. Correct, you don't give your kids supper. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't, which tells us either that HaKadosh Baruch Hu forgives them or he expected it. And expected a very harsh, you know, if they run out of food, like you said.
They don't know how to communicate. Right, this concept of having a need and being able to have it satisfied by someone is totally foreign to them. Until now, any of their needs were just part of the reality of their lives.
And it was supplied to them.
And it was or it wasn't. But there wasn't a concept of being able to petition for something.
Okay.
They still had a slave mentality.
Without a doubt, and you have to try to free them of it.
Forgiving.
Hashem Moshe, hineni mamtir lachem lechem min hashamayim, v'yatza ha'am v'laktu dvar yom biyomo, leman anasenu hayelech b'torati imlo. Right. So Hashem says to Moshe, wonderful. I will rain down for you bread from the heavens, and the nation will go out and collect. Dvar yom biyomo, each and every day, leman anasenu, so I will test them, will they follow my Torah or not? V'haya biyom hashishi, on the sixth day, v'hechinu et asher yaviyu, and they shall prepare that which they will bring, v'haya mishnel asher yikitu yom yom. Okay, and they will know, right? And that way they will have double that which they collect each and every day. So first of all, there's a lot of very interesting things here.
They're going through Jew school. To learn how to be Jewish. They have to learn that on Thursday they've got to have double Shabbos and everything.
On Thursday, it's interesting that you're already on Thursday. He said Friday. Right. Well, you're collecting.
On Friday. I'm cooked on Thursday.
I know, right. but it's so sure interesting. So what does Hashem mean? Aleman anasenu, so that I will test him. Hayelech b'torati imlo. What's the test?
Well, maybe it's an answer to what you said at the beginning of the class, that they should have gone to Hashem and said, where's our food? But they go to Moshe.
Okay.
Because they have a disconnect. They think that Hashem is back in Israel. So I think that every day, if you know that every single day you have to wake up and believe that Hashem is going to give you the man, okay, then that kind of, like, physically takes something that's very spiritual and turns into something physical. Every day you have to say and realize Hashem is here with me. I have to believe in Him, and that's how I will survive.
Right, correct. I mean, we think of it as like you could look at it one of two ways. Could you imagine? It's very hard for us to imagine, right? You know, go to the refrigerator. Like I said yesterday, Rina went shopping yesterday. Before yesterday, the refrigerator was empty. The refrigerator wasn't empty. Right? It was empty of the things that I like. You know? But there were still like the vegetables that I don't really like, you know, and you know, her 1% milk and the bread in the freezer. But it's hard for us to imagine. Empty. Mamash empty. Like, I think like I think it's in America, I don't know what it was like in other places. Like our parents or our grandparents know what it was like when they lived through the Depression. Like, they remember what it was like.
And the Holocaust.
The Holocaust is like, you know, like...
My grandparents remember.
Right, I mean, people, in general, like, you don't have enough to eat.
Our kids, if they don't have, like, a snack every 2 hours. Right. Have a cookie, like...
You know what I'm saying? But it's so foreign to us to, like, imagine the cupboard is bare. And you have enough for today. But what'll be tomorrow?
It's another day.
It'll come. Tomorrow's another day. Now, the Midrash says the following. This is the Midrash. And this is, I think, such a musar for us. Mahu anisayon. What was the test? Elamikan haya Rabbi Elazar Omer. Rabbi Elazar would say, Kol mi sheyesh lo ma yochal hayom. Ve'omer ma ani ochel machar. If you have what to eat today, and you say, what am I going to eat tomorrow? Hareze mechusar amana. You're missing something in your emuna. You know, and I'm like, wow. And I think, by the way, through a lot of history, this is the way a lot of people lived. You know, they worried about their daily bread. And they got up today and they davened Hashem and they worked and they were paid probably in wheat or they were paid in money and they took their money and they went and bought dinner. And if they didn't make money today, then there was less dinner. You know, and that's just the way it was for many people, I think for much of pop civilization throughout history. And today, we're like, you know, we're so far beyond that. You know, we're so far beyond that. Like, it should make us realize to what level our emuna is not tested and not questioned. You know, and how much our ancestors had emuna, and to us, like, you know, I'm not worried about, like, you know, I think most of us are in a situation where even if, God forbid, our parnasa was cut off tomorrow, we would have enough to eat for a year. You know what I'm saying? And we would still worry about tomorrow. I would. That's just me personally. You know, and so the lesson of the man is such a powerful lesson of tomorrow. What are you going to eat tomorrow? I have this thing also, like, somehow, like, you know, like, there are certain people, especially when they go on vacation, like, they're at lunch, and they're like, okay, what are we going to eat for dinner?
I can't be in the moment.
That's a thing that just, like, revulses me. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, just eat lunch.
But something that's, like, so relevant is what's happening now in Haiti. Like, people, because of the earthquake, they had nothing. And for 2 weeks, there was no food to be found. No, everything is destroyed.
Right.
Everything, that's, like, the ultimate. They're waiting for people to bring them food. And, you know, if that happened, you know, we think there's just food everywhere.
You know what they say, interestingly, about Haiti? I saw an article recently that people, that the etiquette, the ethic in Haiti now is whatever, if you have something, they say they're sharing it. That whoever has something, they give somebody who doesn't have. Because they know that the United Nations is there or whatever. You know, not too scary or anything, but I think that the thing that frightens me most, you think how dependent we are on technology. Right, we've built our society in such a way that it's so dependent on technology that if for a short period of time, relatively short period of time, we were not able to have the systems that bring us our, you know, water, electricity, food, you know what I'm saying? We would be in big trouble.
Blackout.
What?
Like the blackout.
That blackout. Right, can you imagine that if that blackout lasted not for 3 days, but for a week or 2 weeks? It's not so hard to imagine.
Couldn't drink our water.
Right. You couldn't drink your water. Right. If you couldn't drink your water, we'd run out of water. Then what would happen? Right? You know, we don't have a mechanism to make food. This is an interesting aside. Sorry to scare you. Okay. So, but it's just a very powerful idea of emuna. There's another midrash that sees this. So the question is, do you see this as a lesson? Is it a symbol of God's love or is it a punishment? Love?
Mm.
Right. So the Midrash says it's like, the Midrash says it's a symbol of God's love. That as soon as, that it's like a king. It's like, imagine a king, he said to his son, I don't want to see you. You know what? Here's your charge card. Go and charge whatever you need, but just don't come and ask me for money. And so he says, the prince doesn't want that. What does the prince want? The prince wants to come see his father every day. You know, so it's so interesting that we say, I don't, like, if you would ask me, well, would you rather know you have enough food for a year, or would you rather only have for today? Personally, if you'd ask me, I'll take the year. But the Midrash says, no, you're wrong. You would rather have it for a day and know that you have it every day and see that it keeps coming every day. Because then you would know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in your life. You know, which is, it's
maybe because there were greater people with more emuna than we are. I mean, like, I don't think most people would choose that path today. So
most people don't choose that path.
Right. So I'm saying, because of the Midrash of the world, they wrote it because they were them and we're us.
Correct.
Maybe they would make that choice, but we wouldn't.
Well, they didn't have that choice, but the question is, if we believe that the Rabbanim, the Midrash, are correct, why don't we choose that path? If we know that it's really right, that that's really, if we want to have the relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, why don't we choose that path? But we should aspire to that level. Should we not aspire to it?
But maybe I'm going to start to say no.
I'm not giving you food tomorrow.
Maybe it's
God can say no. Not everybody has food every day.
Okay?
But maybe it's because you can't imagine having that kind of relationship with God. You say, oh, you can have the kind of relationship with God where every day you have a connection with him.
Uh-huh.
Or you can have a relationship where you know you have your food for a year. We just can't imagine being in that situation.
Why not?
But you know what? Why would you say no then? If you can have, oh, get your food for a year.
Yeah.
Or you can like have a relationship with God every single day. Why would you say no? It's just bizarre, aren't they? I feel like the only
Why would you say no to the relationship with God every day or for the food for the year?
Yeah.
We do say no, don't we? We all make life choices that say, no, I got to worry about a year from now, not a day from now. We all do.
Yeah, but there's also Ishtadlut. There's also...
But I'm not saying not to make your Ishtadlut.
No one says don't have a pension fund. No, you can't say to someone, don't have a pension fund. What, that when you're too tired to work, you should just, you know, not have any food?
No.
Okay. Yes, you have to daven to Hashem that your pension fund doesn't go to pot and that you don't invest with someone like Madoff. There is a munah still in putting money in a pension fund, that it should be enough and stuff like that, but it's still your responsibility at this point to make sure that you're not going to be...
I'm not sure. I just don't know if Chazal would agree with that. But they would. So you're saying that you have to worry so much that a Kadosh Baruch Hu won't take care of me 40 years from now.
Well, Meretz Hashem, when you're...
I think you have to live in the reality of your own society.
Uh-huh.
And in that society,
that's like saying,
what a person who says, you would look at a person who
like
says,
that you shouldn't take out life insurance. Either you're saying don't have life insurance.
There are opinions that say don't.
There are opinions that say.
Right. That's not crazy. It's not crazy.
Why? To not take out life insurance.
It's crazy.
If you put
a to not have life insurance?
Yeah.
And who would God forbid life experience? Support your family, take care of your family? If you have that much, it's good to have a moon in Hashem, 100%. But in today's day and age, you know, there's no one to pay your mortgage, so your family doesn't have anywhere to live.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And there's no money to put food on the table or send them to school, so your 15-year-old has to go out and work. Yes, that is what happens 100 years ago.
And that's a tool Hashem gave us. It's to help Hashem ourselves.
Correct. Correct. you're talking to someone who Baruch Hashem has a pension plan and life insurance. You know what I'm saying? So you're preaching to the choir. My question is, what does that do to our emunah?
What does that do to our
relationship with Hashem?
No, but even in those days, people had to build a mill and a threshing floor to be able to provide food for themselves every single day. They still have to provide themselves with the tools to be able to do it. So you're saying, well, don't have a threshing floor. I mean, the bread will just... I'm not saying it. I'm saying, what are the costs?
Why do you have to have a Muna that
even the things that we set aside that they're worth something. Let's say someone in Haiti right now had all of their whole pension, instead of having it in a bank, they had it in real estate.
In Haitian real estate bonds.
Real estate, okay? So they lost it all. So we still have to have a Muna.
Can I read you Kliyakar? Can I read you Kliyakar? Yeah. Okay. Laman anasenu hayelech b'torati imlo. This is on Shin Mem Gimel, if you have it, the Kliyakar, on Shin Mem Gimel. Okay. I, you know, these are issues that just to raise about and to raise our awareness. I'm not saying, you know, you all should go home and tell your husbands to quit their jobs, and you know what I'm saying, we're going to live in. I don't recommend that.
We won't be sitting here if our husbands quit our jobs.
Okay, you do have to translate it, I agree. Says Kliyakar. Okay, Pirush Rashi. Im yishmeru mitzvot tatzuluyot bo. Shelo yotiru, velo yetsu b'shabbat lilkot. Right? What is the test? Hashem wants them to listen, not to collect on Shabbat. That's the test. V'chol zeh ne'amar l'midat habitachon. It's their level of faith. Ki im lo yotiru mimenu, zehu mofet shem shleimim b'midat habitachon. If they don't leave over for tomorrow, right? If they take only what they need for today, that's the level of their faith. Ki mi sheyesh lo pak b'salo, v'omer ma ochal l'machar, ma ochal l'machar, what should I eat tomorrow? Harezi mikat ne'amana. V'chein im lo yetsu b'shabbat lilkot, harehem bituchim shema shelaktu etmol, yaspik lehem gam liot amacharat. Right? Shabbat is a test, not to go work on Shabbat. Baruch Hashem, we don't have that test.
Well, why was it a test if they got the pishnayim earlier?
Yeah.
It's sitting in your cabinet.
Every time you have more in your cabinet, you're worried about the next day. And look at us. The more we have, the more I'm worried about 40 years from now. If you were to tell our grandparents, you know, who are living in the Depression and they had something in their cupboard, yeah, but what are you going to do in your pension? What are you going to do 40 years from now? What would they have said? Are you nuts? 40 years from now, I should worry about retirement? Right. We'll worry about it later. It's just like, the more you have, the more you worry about what's going to be after that. What am I going to leave to my children? What are they going to do? You know what our parents would have said? Let them work. I worked. They'll work. But somehow we're concerned about leaving in Yerusha. You know what I'm saying? I don't know why, to be honest with you. Okay. V'az yelchu v'torati. And then they will follow my Torah. He says it. Ki mi she'eno shalem b'midat ha-bitachon. Someone who is not shalem b'midat ha-bitachon, complete with the element of faith, mechale kol yamav le'esof v'lichnos. He consumes all of his days gathering and bringing in money. U'matay yaseh le'beit Hashem la'asok b'torah. When's he gonna... I won't say learn Torah, but I think... When he will he immerse himself in spirituality? Kenoda midarchei rov haolam. This is what most of the world does. Haolchim achrei hahevel v'yehavlo v'aisik b'torah tafel etzlam. What's he saying? No. What's he saying? He's saying it's a choice. He's not saying, of course, you have to worry about your parnasa. But somehow the worry about parnasa becomes so all-consuming that we then... We negate, you know, the spiritual aspect, the aspect of spiritual pursuit.
But when did the Kliyakar live?
What?
When did the Kliyakar live?
I don't know, Italy in the 1500s or whatever. Okay, so imagine in his time it wasn't so great easy.
Exactly, either. That's what I'm trying to say. Like, it was probably an all-consuming thing,
mm-hmm.
but not to have Yerusha, but to have bread on the table for today and to have enough to also have for Shabbat.
So that's exactly what he's saying. It's exactly what he's saying. He's saying that you become so consumed with what bread will I eat
right.
that you negate the element of spiritual pursuit. And I think that that's something that we all, and this is like, yeah, what you're talking about, that's something that we all fall prey to. When is enough enough? And then when do you say, and this is what I was telling the Shibudu Umi girls, and when do you say, you know what? I'm going to cut back on my hours because Baruch Hashem, I have enough, because my lifestyle is good enough. Because, you know, whatever it is enough. I don't have to take that vacation. I don't have to go to that restaurant. I don't have to whatever. Because I need to have a charuta. Or I want to go in to work late. I don't have to work 12 hours a day. And I think that not everyone is in this situation, but we are sometimes presented with this choice of, hey, I got another job offer for you. Oh, great. As opposed to saying, you know what? I don't really need it. It's not worth the time. And that's a very hard thing to do, because once you're on this path, and I think we're all on that path of upward mobility and having more and doing more, and this is, I think, something for all of us to consider, as opposed to saying, you know, Baruch Hashem, we're good. And I'm going to sort of, and I will be honest with you, all of us, I think, made this choice in a very real way when we came here. You know? And everybody said, first of all, everybody said, you can't make it in Israel, you can't make a living. Did anybody not hear that? Anybody not hear that? Right? You're never going to make a living. Plus, all of us downsized our lives. I don't know. I mean...
That's what I was going to say. You're yeah. talking to people...
I know. I'm giving you chizuk.
I'm not saying this particular group, but the majority of people, the major middle class in Israel lives kamat month to month. I mean, maybe a little bit extra. They have some savings and they can handle a burst pipe. But... The majority of the middle class are not...
Wait, one second. I think it's very apropos to who said it before about what happens in Australia. Right?
Leora, sorry.
Yeah. Yes and no. Because it's month to month based upon the quality of life or the level that right. you want it to have.
So an Israeli would say, how many electronics?
Okay, guilty, right? How many gadgets you buy, and I need the next thing, or you know what I'm saying? We're all subject to this question of need or want versus, and it's not a judgment on anybody. It's a question that you have to ask yourself. You know what I'm saying? To what degree are the needs, a level of needs that I've established for myself, right, consonant with, and what am I and consonant with the values that I want to have and the needs that I really need or the demands that I've sort of established. I agree with you. A pension is important. Of course you need a pension. I'm not, you know. And I think life insurance is also important. Right? But do I need to work that much extra in order to have XYZ plus? Because that's really what we're talking about, Dvorah, I think. You know what I'm saying?
Why do you consider luxuries? I mean, people consider...
What? And everybody's different. Right?
Everybody's different, but there's also cultural norms.
Ooh. Why are we subject to cultural norms? Why are we...
Do you want your son, when he is old enough to work at 18, let's say, do you want to be able to say to him, it's okay, son, you could stay and learn in yeshiva for a year or two.
Uh-huh.
Or is it, I'm sorry, you're 18 years old, I don't have any more chiyuv to support you. If you want to sit on yeshiva, it's your problem now.
Wait, 1 second. I think people who make choices about like living, I would say, less wealthy lives mm-hmm. also send their kids to yeshiva. And they find a way, and it's hard, but they do. You know what I'm saying? So, like, we all have either friends or relatives who made choices about, people that we know, made choices about choosing more spiritual life and less physical pleasure, and they suffer for it physically. They do. They make choices and they sacrifice. Right? But somehow, like, they struggle more. It's much harder for them. But they do send their children to yeshiva and their children are educated in a certain way. Meaning, a lot of times we take for granted that we have needs when it's not needs but expectations, like cultural norms. That word cultural norms is very, very strong words.
No, but they have a lot to do with mishpachot matzah, like where we came from. Like, I grew up eating chicken, meat, and fish during the week.
Right.
In Israel, it's not the accepted norm, but for me, it would be very hard not to have chicken, meat, or fish the whole week long.
Correct.
So we buy that, and that's part of our life. I don't have to be super luxurious because I happen to have chicken on a Tuesday night.
Right.
But in Israeli standards, that's considered... Would say luxurious or wealthy or
disposable. No, because they have it for lunch.
They have it for lunch. I don't know if I agree with that. I don't know if I would agree with that. But it's a question of, you know, I mean, we all make... Right, it's an example. Use it as an example. But I'm not even going to give examples because we all have our own about what we need and what we want. But he's saying that this is the question. Meaning, at some point, I think, we have to ask ourselves, maybe I can downsize a little and focus on something else. It doesn't always have to be, yes, I'll take the extra job. Yes, I'll do the extra hours. Yes, I'll, you know what I'm saying? Take on the added responsibility because it does detract. Switch, they have to be the rest of Kliyakar. Well, you know, we switch direction totally. Kliyakar says something really fascinating. He says about the mun. Okay, Devar Acher. Levisa Esek HaTorah Yesh Lo Mun'im Mibayit U'michutz. He says there are internal and external detractors from immersing yourself in Torah. Mibayit U'mitzad Ma'achalim Gasim Hamafsidim zuchut ubrirut haseichel. It's so interesting. He says, the food that we eat is unhealthy. He says, and it prevents you from thinking clearly, prevents you from focusing. He says that's a problem with physical food that we have to eat. And then he skips on. He says, mibachutz externally. Halohem, I'm skipping a little. Halohem be'ebrei yardein be'avro derech yamim be'naharot v'raglav ka'ayalot liyodof acharei mizonotav. Externally, it's a problem because you have to go earn money. It's a reality. Obviously, life and reality detracts you from immersing yourself in spirituality. See, so the man solved both those problems. First of all, the man ended up on their doorstep. They didn't have to do anything. So they could immerse themselves in the midbar in immersing themselves in spirituality. Since with the man also, it was pure spiritual food. It was the ideal food. He says it didn't give them the, like, you know what I'm saying? It didn't detract from their ability to have seichel and to be focused and to study the Torah and to learn. So it's very nice. What? Spirituality, I don't know, whatever Moshe gave them, 40 years in the desert. It's just like, I thought that the end of the Kliyakar is fascinating. Why is it fascinating, he says? Because what you eat also affects your spirituality. I knew this would be popular. Right? And I say this in specifically, I will say this to a group of mothers, what do you give your children to eat for breakfast in the morning? When I say this as a teacher, the year before we left, I was, you know, a group of 7th grade boys. What do 7th grade boys mostly eat for breakfast in the morning?
Nothing or sugar.
Sugar cereals. Either nothing or sugar cereal. Usually mostly sugar cereal. And you can see right away. They came in, first thing in the morning, like bouncing off the walls. And about 30 minutes later, they were all just like, dead. You know what I'm saying? Because what happens? Right? I think sugar cereal and cereal in general is the worst thing you could give your children to eat in the morning. Because you get this, it's refined grain, and plus sugar, right? Their bodies digest it like this, and then all of a sudden, wham, right? It's all gone, and the sugar is gone, and then they're exhausted. As opposed to what you really should give your kids in the morning, protein, right? They should give them eggs in the morning, or oatmeal, or something. Why? Because what you eat affects how you think, and how you function. And if it's true for our kids, it's true for ourselves. You know, but I'm saying, it's so interesting, the Kliyakar was talking about, the man was pure food. It was the perfect food. And so even though we talk about the spiritual nature and Akash Baruch Hu giving us, Akash Baruch Hu was also worried about the food that we eat and whether it's appropriate for the way that we want to worship Him. I do think it will end off in a very interesting perspective that the Kliyakar always says correct, that even the food itself that Akash Baruch Hu gave us was designed in such a way as to be better Ovdei Hashem. And so it's a nice lesson to end off on as we go on to, eat breakfast. It's hard. It's extra time. It's not easy.
Eggs take as long to make as a bowl of cereal.
Right.
Scrambled eggs take as long to make in the morning as pouring a bowl of cereal with milk.
And we don't see it, but it definitely has an effect on where kids are in the morning. All right. But we'll stop here. Everybody should have a good week and a week of bracha and parnasa and emunah. We'll leave it at that.